Hi, Matthew Cannon. Welcome to Cable.
Hi, Bill. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Matthew Cannon is a director and policy man for the Maine Sierra Club. He was one of the leaders of a Maine ballot initiative that prohibited the construction of a super high voltage electricity line that won the opposition, the one by a stunning close to 60% to 40% to stop that big grid that would have brought electricity to Massachusetts, mostly from a set of immense dams in Canada, the province of Quebec. Maine would have been bisected by a huge ribbon of land that was defeated in the initiative. The initiative is being challenged in the courts by all their companies and financiers building the grid. But win or lose in the courts, the Sierra Club and all the other groups who sponsored the initiative are now collecting signatures for a second initiative to take over Central Maine Power, which is Maine's largest investor-owned utility, and replace it with a large cooperative made up of many smaller cooperatives throughout Maine who are committed to building out local sun and wind, as well as offshore wind that Maine receives along most of its periphery. Today, we'll be talking about both initiatives, why the big grid transmitting electricity from faraway dams is so destructive, and why local onshore sun and wind and offshore wind is so superior. Matt Cannon, tell us why the big grid bringing electricity from those huge dams across the border, why is it so destructive?
Thanks, Bill. And I should say that, you know, this was a multi-year initiative, grassroots movement, and I'm just a representative for the Sierra Club who worked on it, but we as a grassroots movement across the country, representing over 4 million members and supporters nationwide and 22,000 here in Maine, we partnered with folks on the ground who would be most impacted by this and the other folks in Canada. And so the biggest reasons why we opposed the corridor, the environmental impacts through untamed wilderness near the Appalachian Trail being a big reason why many groups signed on. We were probably most focused on the destructive impact of the dams, these mega dams themselves in Quebec, on the lands and rivers and the lives of Indigenous Native Canadians. So we really tried to bring light to their plight with the Canadian government over decades and the impacts that these very, very, very large reservoirs. I mean, these dams are absolutely massive and their ecological impact really is enormous. So we were focused on that, and there's some potential methane impacts. There's lack of science on, are these really clean, non-greenhouse gas emitting projects, and then the impacts on Indigenous folks. Not to mention that it's just a very long distance and there were folks not really consulted that well during the process.
I've read that the area covered by the dams and submerged is about the size of Vermont, which is not that big a state, but in the United States, it's a huge amount of land. And that when that occurs, submerging an enormous amount of trees and other plants, as well as all the plants on the ground and all of the ground, it leads to a biological process of decomposition. The bacteria get busy, and you get tremendous methane clouds coming out of these areas, which is, of course, really terribly happening in Siberia and other places,
right,
where enormous areas of peat and other submerged vegetation are now no longer frozen and are emitting methane. It seems it's a huge amount of greenhouse gases.
Right. And we know from studies across the world and other mega dams that that is a problem. Each climate is slightly different, but I think the lack of clear science around that and the lack of monitoring is a huge concern if we're calling these renewable energy. Additionally, I should mention another aspect to Indigenous folks up there is methylmercury poisoning. So water impounded and just contained in that reservoir has a buildup of mercury over time, and the fish source is their native food, and so they can't really eat those fish anymore because of these dams. So that is obviously a social justice concern and something that we tried to bring light to as well. And we know that there are far cheaper and less destructive, more reliable options for energy generation and supply through community energy, energy democracy, distributed generation, all these terms we use just to really focus on things that are less destructive, actually clean, and more resilient and localized.
Yeah, let's get to that, Matt. This is KBOO Radio. Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour talking about Cannon of the Maine Sierra Club, one of the leaders of the big Maine coalition that sponsors and fought for and won a state initiative campaign that prohibited the construction of a super high voltage electricity line, a huge ribbon of denuded and herbicide land that sliced through the whole of Maine. We just discussed the environmental damage. Matt Cannon, the campaign won not just for preserving the land, as you pointed out, that it also argued there was a superior way to get off of fossil fuels and reduce greenhouse gas emissions and concentrations. You mentioned distributed energy and local energy. You have to have a vision of the electric system Maine needs in the future. How did you describe and argue for it?
Sure. Our Central Maine Power utility is rated the worst in the country, and people are very upset with many of their practices, from billing issues to resistance to solar interconnection. So I think there was a lot of just mistrust and displeasure with our utilities, which have had many years to do better and don't. Yeah, the initiative won for all the reasons we talked about, environmental, indigenous rights in Canada, and I think that idea that Mainers want more control over their own energy supply and to have a more resilient grid, which would also create more jobs in Maine. And we know we're interconnected in New England, so there's a lot of regional benefits to being interconnected to the larger grid. I don't think we could just do it as Maine independently. We do still need some transmission interconnection points, especially as we look at the Midwest for wind and offshore wind in the Northeast. There will still need to be some transmission, but I think our focus and people in Maine really want more wind and solar. We know battery storage is ramping up. Yeah, Mainers want more control. So for these projects and our initiatives, there's a lot of support for Maine Power. And actually, the state of Maine just came out with a report on how we could get there and the distribution mix. And so we know that offshore wind in Maine has a high potential. We know there's still some left for onshore Maine, especially in northern Maine. And solar is ramping up, even though we're Maine and, you know, not a ton of sun compared to other places. That healthy mix with some storage, the state has already reported, we can meet our clean energy goals and go 100%. So if it can be done in Maine, it can probably be done everywhere else. And without any really new technologies, we have most of everything we need. We just need the investment right now.
This is Bill Resnick, KBOO Radio, for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Matt Cannon of the Maine Sierra Club. He's the leader of a big Maine coalition that's sponsored and fought for and won a state initiative campaign that prohibited the construction of a super high voltage electricity line. You've been gathering signatures. I understand you have 75% of the signatures. You're sure to go way over. Tell us about the initiative and how you would use it to build out the alternative system.
So, yeah, we just kind of framed one issue of the transmission corridor from mega dams in Canada, and our utilities, specifically Central Maine Power, through PACs and a lot of spending of our ratepayer dollars, has worked extensively to make sure that that project happens so they can make more money and uphold their contracts. And that is just keeps rubbing Mainers the wrong way, especially when Central Maine Power has been rated the worst utility in the United States for customer satisfaction 4 years in a row. We're very high up there for worst state in reliability. And as I mentioned, there's the problems with the utility slowing our integration of solar. So we have a lot of community solar that's obviously part of our distributed generation mix, creates local jobs, and the utility has slowed those interconnection agreements and has just been cutting corners. So people recognize what they're doing, and it has become clearer that they are, as a privately operated monopoly, beholden to shareholders, mostly foreign-owned. They have guaranteed profits, and people are catching on to that and wondering, why do we still have the worst customer satisfaction and the worst reliability? And so this initiative is not it's morphed over time. There's many local cooperatives across the country, especially in rural areas. This is an idea that goes back 100 years almost, the New Deal era. And these were set up because, you know, folks need electricity in rural parts of the country. And over time, it changes form. There's good examples across the country, one being Sacramento Municipal Utility District, which has their own goal of eliminating all carbon emissions by 2030, and they serve a similar area of people to Maine. So that's been a model for us to look at, to how do we solve this problem of these utilities making guaranteed profits and just performing poorly. And we know we have this climate crisis, so how can we do all this at once? And so our consumer-owned utility campaign is really based on four principles: lower costs, better reliability, clean energy, and accountability. The cost, we know by taking the private utility and creating a consumer-owned utility, will save over $9 billion over 30 years. We already have examples of this in Maine, of consumer-owned utilities, and we know that Mainers who are served by investor-owned utilities pay 58% more on average for their electricity. Yeah.
58%. Well, they have
more
to serve their investors and stockholders and highly paid executives.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing. Obviously, people want lower rates, and they also want to know that, you know, we're accountable to our climate goals. And we know that with the savings from a consumer-owned utility, and I will mention that ourpowermaine.org has a lot more of stats and information, but in general, the goal is we want to pay a mortgage, right? We don't want to pay rent anymore. So as Mainers, if we can make a mortgage payment to our utility instead of rent payment, we'll actually own it and we'll pay less over time and we'll have assets. So the savings between paying a private utility a guaranteed rate of return of almost 12% versus paying a bond of about 3%, that's a lot of savings. That's billions of dollars. And we know that we can reinvest that in clean energy and we can have more accountability of our grid and be proud to have Pine Tree Power Company, a Maine-owned, Maine-governed board that we democratically elect. And so I think that's a very appealing concept. It's bipartisan. We have a lot of Republicans who co-sponsored the original bill. And the only reason we're at the ballot initiative is because it got vetoed in the last legislative session, but it's a bipartisan issue and people are really psyched, which is why we're already 75% of the way there for gathering signatures.
That's great. You know, one final thing that I think our listeners should know, local energy is much more reliable than having to import energy from very long distances. Not that you don't have to have some grids and have that regional grid that can funnel electricity to you if a huge storm hits. Those are necessary. And also, even after storms, local systems are absolutely necessary in emergencies because they can be repaired generally so quickly using off-the-shelf materials, whereas big grids are only as reliable as my sense as their most vulnerable pylon. And that big grid you had goes over 120 rivers and through wetlands and every other conceivable geological formation. It seems to me that you can be sure that you're going to have enough electricity to keep your medicines refrigerated and have sufficient power for communications, for keeping up your cell phone and radio and other communication devices. That's a big selling point, it seems to me. This is Cable Radio, Bill Resnick for the Old Moral Variety Hour. You've heard me talking to Matt Cannon of the Maine Sierra Club. They're on their way to hopefully take over the energy system, not just the Sierra Club, but a big coalition of organizations in Maine to develop a democratic and sustainable energy system. What you're doing is great. And to conclude, just tell us about the Sierra Club's Ready for 100 program. This is a national program.
Sure. As we move to the future and the vision of our grid and our climate crisis, we need to do it all at once. And this is going to be a challenge. We all know that. And citing these projects and scale and where, it's going to take a lot of work. And we do know, though, that some efficiency and weatherization methods to reduce our actual demand is a vital component as well. But yes, our Ready for 100 campaign throughout the country focuses on communities to actually reach 100% renewable energy. And we've had a lot of success in various communities, mostly cities and groups of cities that can actually make those commitments. This is a really exciting time. And, you know, we're helping communities organize and support those efforts in whatever way makes sense for those local communities. We know we just need to hit 100% clean energy as soon as possible. This is serious stuff, and we need all of us together to work on it. It takes a movement, and that's what we're committed to at the Sierra Club in all communities in a just and equitable way.
Matt Cannon, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thank you, Bill. It was my pleasure.